Oh, my. And not in a good way. Not in the Corey Seager hits a three-run blast to win the game way. In a what just happened kind of way. I don't even know where to begin. We've got a few ideas, but we'll get to everything here in just a second. All the key moments, some of the highlights, a couple of them. There were a few bright spots in this game. Of course, if you did not watch the Rangers drop game one of three to the Colorado Rockies in Denver, score of 4-2, Rockies take the lead in the bottom of the eighth inning on a Charlie Blackmon two-run double. And the Rangers come up empty in the ninth, lose this one 4-2. Terrible loss. And we're going to get into why in just a little bit. But first of all, y'all know here at Ride on Rangers, we cover everything sports, but we put a little bit of an extra emphasis on all the teams that we love from the great state of Texas, including the Rangers. And man, is there a lot to unpack in this one today. Let's go ahead and get right into it. So in my mind, there's two things. Maybe I'd go with three things that stand out as the main contributors to the loss tonight. First of all, let's go surface level. So we had a terrible, terrible strike zone tonight. Strike zone was absolutely horrific. And look, you know, those of you that have been with me for a while, I don't come on and say this all the time, once in a while. So I'm not guy whose team loses and we just complain about the strike zone. Because there's been plenty of games where the Rangers just haven't played well, haven't hit well, nothing to do with the strike zone. But with that being said, I don't know if there was a more impactful bad call in this game than the Nate Lowe called third strike with the bases loaded in the, what was it, the top of the seventh inning when the Rangers finally took the lead on that Corey Seager walk. The strike zone was absolutely ridiculous tonight. I'll probably post to my stories and show y'all how bad of a call we're talking. We're talking not even close, not even close. And bases loaded at that point, you've got the reliever on the ropes and you're giving away free strikes and a free out in the case of Nate Lowe getting rung up strike three on a pitch that was probably over half a foot outside, over half a foot outside easily. So I think you start there. The zone was all over the place tonight. Bochy, you could tell, was getting fired up as the game was going on. I thought actually for a moment that he got called out, or excuse me, he got thrown out of the game. It was after the Carter at bat. They were kind of showing Will Venables for a little bit. And I was like, did Bochy get thrown out? I didn't know why they were showing Venables in that spot, but Bochy was finally getting fed up at the end of that game. The strike zone was completely ridiculous tonight. And Nate Lowe getting called out on strikes in the top of that seventh inning was just huge. Nate Lowe had been hitting the ball hard all night long. All night long, Nate had been hitting the ball well, seeing it well. In fact, in the at-bat previous to that called strikeout, he had pretty much sent a laser line drive, ground ball right up the middle. Shortstop was shading and was right there. Nate Lowe had been having good at-bats all night long. Who knows what he does if the umpire can just call balls and strikes correctly. And guys, this is what we're talking about when we've had the debate about, about strike zones and about, should they go to the challenge system? Should they go to an electronic strike zone? The argument of, it all balances out, all things are fair eventually, it's not accurate. There's not any kind of makeup call. I mean, maybe a 1 in 1,000 chance there's going to be an opportunity for a makeup call when you ring up a guy on a pitch 6 inches outside the zone at least, with the bases loaded in a 2-1 ball game. There's just not going to be a very likely chance for a makeup call in that spot for things to balance out. That's a huge call. It's one that would have easily been overturned if you have a challenge system in place like they do in AAA and in the minor leagues with balls and strikes. So at minimum for next year, I really hope they go to the ball strike challenge system. If you're not going to go robo-ump, which I know Manfred's talked about coming in the next couple of years, if you're not going to go full robo-ump, you got to go at least challenging balls and strikes. And I know that some of the Rangers pitchers, John Gray, some of the bullpen guys were getting the benefit of some calls. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think that this happened, but I don't think that the Rockies had a bases loaded situation tonight. Maybe once. I don't know. I didn't feel like they did. I could be wrong on that, but didn't have that bad of a call go against them with bases loaded. So with that, I don't think that there's any question MLB needs to move to at least a challenge system. And I think we've talked about the challenge system here on the show and what that would look like. I think we discussed you get like one basically every half inning. So in the minor leagues, you get a challenge every half inning, and then you get two, I believe, in the seventh inning and on. It might be per batter. It might just be one per team. I'm not 100% sure on that. Can't remember. Go to it, please. Ridiculous strike zone tonight by the home plate umpire. It did, I think, cost the Rangers some runs. I don't know, and I can't say with 100% certainty that Nate Lowe drives in some runs there in the top of the seventh with the bases loaded. But he had been hitting the ball well all night long. And when you just straight up take the bat out of his hands when the pitcher had just walked Corey Seager, you're not trying to walk home a run there. I mean, you're trying to be careful with Corey Seager, who we're going to talk about a little bit later on. Seager heating up right now, hit a home run, hit a double tonight. You're not trying to walk Corey Seager there. So clearly you've got the pitcher on the ropes. And see, that's the thing that I don't get is the pitcher, and I'm not sure on the name off the top of the head. I'm going to try and go to the box score and look it up as we go. But you got a guy that I think it was Lawrence who had just walked Seager, had two walks, and clearly was on the ropes. I have no idea why, as an umpire, you're giving that guy any kind of benefit of the doubt. Look, you've got a John Gray, and John Gray wasn't perfect tonight, but I'm just using his name as an example. You've got a John Gray who's painting the corners all night long. Yeah, okay, I can see you give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt on some pitches that are slightly off the plate or high or low. That makes sense. The guy that ends up striking out Nate Lowe wasn't even close on some of those Corey Seager pitches. I just don't know why, as an umpire, you're even trying to give a guy like that the benefit of the doubt in that kind of moment. If anything, the zone shrinks a little bit. You've got a guy who's wild and not throwing strikes. It just doesn't make any sense to me when you've got a guy and you're an umpire back there behind the plate. You've got a guy who's clearly wild and doesn't have it, and you're calling way more than borderline pitches strikes. Makes no sense to me. Makes absolutely no sense. So that's the first thing. Mike, not sure about that one, by the way. What's up, by the way? My friend, thank you for tuning in tonight. I didn't hear that. I would be interested to know. And like I said, the Rangers did get calls their way too. So we're not sitting here saying, yeah, it was one-sided, it was terrible. It just so happens that the biggest missed call in the game went to the Rangers. It did. The top of that seventh inning, Nate Lowe getting called out on a pitch, probably at least half a foot outside. It's a huge, huge spot in the game. That could have been Rangers break the game wide open, and you've got maybe a 3-4 run cushion. And that changes the whole complexion of the game, the whole complexion. So let's talk about a couple other things. This was pretty much a quintessential Leody Taveras night in that you saw the flashes and the potential of Leody making an outstanding play. I believe it was in the same inning, the bottom of the seventh inning, right? The first out or second out, Leody makes an outstanding play running back on a fly ball all the way to the track. And that's a play, by the way, that earlier on in this week, Leody muffed completely. So when he was going back, I got to be honest, I'm holding my breath, just hoping Leody comes down with that ball on the track, and he ended up making an outstanding, outstanding play. But then on a play that would have got you out of that inning, out of the seventh inning with the score 2-1 with the lead intact, Leody comes in probably 20, 25 yards and calls off Corey Seager, who was pretty much camped under the ball. I mean, Seager is camped under that ball. So for the people or for anybody saying, why didn't the infield catch it? It's because Leody has priority, and you can clearly see Leody calling off Seager at the end of the play. You can see his mouth yelling, got it, or ball, ball, or whatever they call, and Seager moves. So we don't need any kind of defense there of why isn't the infield catching it. They're going to get out of the way if the outfielders call them out. That's little league stuff. So Leody, I don't know why, didn't let Seager just handle that one. Seager is camped. And you don't need to, as an outfielder, get every single pop fly. I mean, great, if you can get to it, awesome. But what's easier, Seager literally standing there camped under it, or Leody running in at full speed? And you know Seager is probably saying, got it, mind. So there's that communication there. That was a mile high pop fly. What I'm trying to say is it's not like Seags is like running back full speed and Leote's got to call him off. That ball was a mile high in the air and Corey Seager was camped under it. I have no idea why Leote felt the need to call him off there. Still should have caught it. It hit him right in the glove. If it hits your glove, you should be catching it as a major league player. So with that, I really, really am just totally at a loss for what to do. I think you're just going to have to play out what you got with Leote right now. I know that they're not going to demote him. I know that they're not going to bench him. They're going to keep playing him. It's just very obvious. They're going to keep playing Leote. We just got to get used to it. But here's my one thing. So you've got Leote in center field. Isn't it maybe time for Carter to get a shot? That's, I think, at least one thing you could consider. Is Carter really a worse defender out there than Leote? I would kind of like to see at this point Carter take control of center field and see what happens. I don't like Leote out in center field. He can make incredible plays, but your center fielder needs to be the sharpest outfielder out there. I don't know if any of us would say, as Rangers fans that have watched Leote and the other outfielders for years now, I don't think a lot of us would say Leote is the most cerebral, sharpest outfielder that the Rangers have. I would probably say Evan Carter would play a better center field than Leote at this point. I mean, look, I have no idea why they haven't tried it out. Maybe they are thinking about it. Maybe it's not even a thought in their minds to move Leote away from center field. But I would really like to see somebody else man center field. Jankowski, let Leote play some left. They're clearly not going to bench Leote. Let Leote play some left. Your center fielder can't be making this many mistakes. This is like the third or fourth muffed ball. I would really like to see Evan Carter get some center field reps. We have to move past Leote's getting DFA'd or benched. I know I do. And I go back and forth. Leote's been such a hot hitter lately. And I have been giving him his props the past couple of nights. I was real, real hard on him the other night. But the past couple of nights, Leote's played well. He's hit the ball well. He went 0 for tonight. Did have a walk, so got on base once. But I'd like to see Evan Carter man center field. And I know that the Carter debate rages on. Why aren't they hitting him against lefties? It's clear that he does struggle against lefties. At the same time, I don't know how a guy gets better against lefties if you don't play them. If you don't play a guy against lefties ever, a 21, 22-year-old kid, however old he is, how's he ever going to get better playing lefties? And at this point, I would rather have Evan Carter striking out every single time against lefties, but have him play a solid left field instead of Zeke Duran, who I know Duran tonight goes 2 for 3, but nevertheless, I'm not really interested in Zeke Duran getting a ton of at-bats at this point. Kind of a nice segue to Wenzel, who I don't know why they continue to give at-bats to. Wenzel is hitting .071 on the season. Look, we're not rooting against him. You know, let's not confuse things. I know whenever sometimes we're critical about certain players on the Rangers, there's always inevitably the Rangers fans that just immediately come to everybody's defense no matter what. Wenzel is hitting .071. Why can't Josh Smith play third base against lefties? Why are you even wasting at-bats on Wenzel? He's clearly in over his head. I just do not understand why they continue to play Wenzel. He needs to go back to the minor leagues. We thought some people are thinking Wyatt Langford needs to go back to the minors to get right with his swing. Send Wenzel back to the minors. I mean, let some of the new guys that just got called up play. I do not know why they continue to give Wenzel 4 at-bats a night. He is clearly, very clearly not ready for major league hitting, for major league pitching. I think that they need to stop with the Wenzel experiment for now. I get it. You're facing a lefty and you're trying to load up on the righties. Whatever. I would rather have Josh Smith play third base and face a left-handed starter than have Wenzel go 0 for 4 every single night. I mean, it is rare you look at the box score when Wenzel gets an opportunity and he's getting one, even a walk just on base. So for me, I'm ready for the Wenzel experiment to be over. I'm ready for Duran to get less at-bats. I don't care about the two hits today. Zeke Duran was one of our best hitters in April and May and then totally tanked the rest of the year. Same thing with Leody last year. I think, you know, we all get rose-colored glasses a little bit, I think, with the World Series championship. Even I do. So I'm not sitting here judging or being condescending. We all have the rose-colored glasses from the World Series championship. Let's remember, Leody Taveras and Ezekiel Duran had very, very hot first 2 months of the year last year. 300 hitters, April, May, a little bit of June. And then both of them fell off a cliff before the season had even reached the halfway point. So for me, I know what I'm getting out of those two guys, and it's probably 250 hitting at best. I would rather watch, and Mike, I couldn't have said this better. I have the same exact thought. I would rather watch Carter K four times against lefties than watch Leody or Ezekiel Duran. You're having Zeke Duran play left field. I would rather watch Carter play left field and strike out four times against lefties. I just would. Again, 281, it's fool's gold. If Zeke Duran hits over 300, I'll have to think of something funny that I can do on the live at the end of the season. If that dude manages to sniff 300 by the end of the year, I'll have to think of something, y'all. I'm not buying into the 2-for-3 night against the Rockies hitting 281. I'm not buying into it. I would much rather see Smitty play against lefties too. Wenzel needs to go back to AAA. And I say that as a fan that wants him to succeed and is watching him clearly being over his head. He's hitting less than 100 on the year. His average, too, he's gotten enough at-bats now where even if he gets a hit, it's not going up over 100 anytime soon. He's going to be up in maybe the 0-80 range. Like, it's not going up anytime soon. So I know that we just traded for Grossman to try and solve this problem with lefty starters. The rest of the league has got to be looking at this. And, I mean, I know that not everybody has just lefties on deck ready to throw against us. But I can only imagine if I'm in division, I'm trying to line up the lefties against this team. The Rangers need to figure out the left-handed starting pitching situation. And I'm talking about their lineup against them. Because every time we face a lefty, I know that we face Sears in the Oakland series. Simi got off to a good start against Sears. I think we put up 4 runs against Sears. But look, lefties have been an issue, and that's why we traded for Grossman. Now, Grossman tonight goes 0-for-2. He had a walk. And look, Robbie, I think it's a feel-good move. I like the move. But Robbie's not giving you anything crazy. Last year, we all know what we're going to get from Robbie. He's going to hit maybe 250. He's going to hit some homers here and there. But if you gave Robbie Grossman 162 games, he's probably not hitting more than 20 home runs at the most. Maybe that's generous. Maybe 15. Robbie Grossman is not going to power this team. It's going to have to come from other places. And there are some guys that have to figure it out against lefties. Having to take Evan Carter out, though, every single game against lefties, I think it's a huge disadvantage. We've seen Duran's defense in left field be costly. Let in a run, right? Duran against Oakland, dropped a fly ball. A run eventually scores off of it. Tonight, Leody, same thing. I'm ready for them to just play the best guys defensively out there and see what happens. The best defensive outfield for the Rangers right now is Jankowski, Evan Carter, and Adolis Garcia. That's the best outfield, the best defensive outfield right now. And honestly, Jankowski, that is something that they need to continue to do in terms of giving it bats to him. He was 0-for-1 tonight, came in for Duran once there was a righty in there. So I really think at this point, just go Jankowski, Carter, and Garcia. And I know that Leody's probably not coming out of the lineup. That's evident. So maybe you have Leody in left field and you mix in Leody, Jankowski, kind of do a little platoon, but that's the most ideal right now. Robbie definitely hits lefties well. He definitely hits lefties well. It's been one game, right, or two games technically, but I do think that he is going to be a good, solid factor against left-handed starters. So I'm glad that Robbie is back. I think it was a great trade, a feel-good trade. Hopefully he'll produce for us and help get the offense jump-started against the lefties, who we're really, really struggling against right now. Now, let's get to probably what's the most controversial decision of the entire night, which is the decision to pitch Yerry Rodriguez in a game that's tied in the eighth inning with two runners on and two outs. Now, I just got a notification from Evan Grant, Rangers beat writer, that Robertson and Yates needed an extra day. LeClerc was going to be the closer tonight, and those two guys were basically unavailable. They needed an extra day. So look, if that's the case, I guess it is what it is. It is what it is, right? What are you going to do there? I mean, if they need an extra day, and that was the plan all along, I guess you got to go with it. I still don't think I would have thrown Yerry Rodriguez in that spot. I mean, Grant Anderson had gone one inning. He was getting into a little bit of trouble. But I think I would have probably tried to go just about anywhere else. I mean, seriously, I don't know why or how they thought that was going to go well, throwing Yerry Rodriguez into that situation. I mean, Yerry Rodriguez has given up a home run probably in over 75% of his appearances. I wish I was lying. I wish I was kidding. Yerry Rodriguez has given up a home run. I'm pretty sure I looked this up about a week ago, maybe even less, maybe 5-6 days ago. Given up a home run in over 75% of his appearances. So why you thought bringing him in against Charlie Blackmon, a veteran hitter. I mean, look, Blackmon is not the Blackmon of, you know, 5-6 years ago making the All-Star team. But Blackmon is their most veteran hitter. And you're sending in Yerry Rodriguez expecting that to go well. A righty-lefty matchup. I know he had already burned lats. But I don't even know why he was a thought to bring in this game. I don't even know why he was a thought. I would have rather brought in LeClerc for the four-out save than Yerry Rodriguez in that spot. I would be interested to know why that wasn't even an option. So you see Grant Anderson getting in trouble. LeClerc is probably going through his warm-ups at minimum in a 2-2 ball game, you got to think. So why not even a thought to go four-out save Jose LeClerc? I would have much rather gone four-out save Jose LeClerc. Who's to say LeClerc doesn't come in 1-2-3 pitches, gets Blackmon out? That's nothing. Now, LeClerc could have come in and given up a base hit as well. We know Jose is not locked down Kirby Yates, but we know that Jose LeClerc has a better shot at getting out of that jam than Yerry Rodriguez. 100%. Mike just saw that comment. I see why CY must, I don't know. I think CY's hands are tied a little bit with all these injuries. And maybe to an extent, Bochy's are as well. But I can tell you this. I would have much rather gone four-out save Jose LeClerc than gone to Yerry Rodriguez. I would have rather left Grant Anderson in the game than go to Yerry Rodriguez in that spot. It was a curious move, but clearly the Rangers were trying to rest Robertson and Yates, who had thrown a fair amount in the Oakland series. But nevertheless, I will say this. You got to think that after a day off, both of them would have been able to tag team four outs at the end of the game. That's the thought that came through my mind. We couldn't get four outs out of those two guys. We couldn't have had Robertson get the out in the eighth and then Yates come in the ninth. I mean, I don't know. Who knows if the Saturday-Sunday games are even going to be close. That's kind of my argument. Like, I'm not saying that the Rangers are just going to smoke the Rockies both Saturday and Sunday, but would anybody be shocked if he did? I mean, if they did blow out the Rockies Saturday and Sunday, nobody would be surprised. And you don't even have to use Yates or Robertson in a blowout. So for me, my mentality, and I know, and I obviously I don't know the conversations in the locker room, but this is probably going to be, I think, if I was betting, one of the only close games. I would be really surprised if both Saturday and Sunday are one-run games. Hey, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But if I'm betting, I'm saying, no, the games on Saturday, Sunday are not going to be 1-2-3-run games. So look, we'll see. But I think that they could have easily had one of those two dudes at least get out of the jam in the eighth inning. Hey, can you give me one out here? Can we get one out? So who knows? Don't know what those inner conversations were like, but I'll tell you this, Yuri Rodriguez, 1,000% no in that kind of spot. And I know that they're trying to give some of those guys opportunities, right? You're trying to see like, okay, can Yuri Rodriguez, maybe if we throw him into a slightly higher pressure situation, right? Not a blowout game. Maybe he'll be like razor sharp focus and we'll just see a completely different dude. But look, can we start with like, he has a 3-run lead, he has a 2-run lead before we throw him into 2-on against one of the better hitters in the Rockies lineup in a tie ball game? You know, this is actually interesting. We'll jump in and out here looking at the comments. Josh Smith, the last time I looked, was hitting above 300 against lefties. Now, this was about a week ago. He did hit against lefties, you know, multiple times over the past week. So I'm not really sure exactly what the splits are. But I'll look him up for y'all since we're on the topic at this point, see how Josh Smith is hitting lefties. So Josh Smith, he has 25 total at-bats against lefties, and he's hitting 280. That's very respectable. 25 is a small sample size, no doubt, to, you know, give you the contrast. He's got 87 at-bats against righties. But I think you got 280. He does have a double. He's got 2 walks. So OBP is 379 against lefties. He does have 8 strikeouts, which comparatively to righties, he does have a higher strikeout rate against lefties. But at this point, he's hitting 280. I'm going to go ahead and let that ride. I'm not having Wenzel take any at-bats away from him. Now, if I see that average start dipping low 200s, okay, now we're talking. Now we're maybe getting Zeke Duran some at-bats against lefties. But I think Josh Smith just needs to play third base every day for this team. You feel like Josh Smith at least gives you a quality at-bat up there every time. I don't even feel like Wenzel has a chance when he's up there. I fully expect outs every single time he comes up to bat. And I wish I could say that Wenzel is like getting super unlucky, like he's hitting these 105-mile-an-hour screamers and they're just like right at somebody. I mean, most of his outs today were weak pop-ups. I mean, he came up late on in the game in the ninth inning, weak pop-up to the shortstop. I mean, it's not even really a competitive at-bat with him. So for me, Smith every day. Smith every day. And then I think the other move that I would make is I would let Evan Carter play center field every day. They must have a plan for him. I would love to know what it is, but I don't know how he's going to get better hitting lefties without actually playing. And if you're going to use the logic that they probably used with Yuri Rodriguez tonight to an extent, I got to say, give Evan Carter the same opportunity, right? Give him the same opportunity. So if your theory on Yuri Rodriguez is let's throw him in there and just see how he does in a big spot, you know, at least give Evan Carter some long runway too. Let him play like 10 consecutive games against lefty starters. And let's see what the average is after those 10 games, after those 10 starts against lefties. You figure that's 40 at-bats, still a pretty small sample size. But nonetheless, I think that you could easily get a pretty good feel for how he's doing when you give him that extended, like actually consistent run of games against the lefty starters. Popping him in there once in a while, I just don't think is going to do the job in that regard. I think that he is going to need, hey, dude, you're just the starter. You're our guy every day out in center field, and we're just going to let that play. I think that does give a guy confidence, and it does change your mentality. Right now, when you only have him starting against righties, against righties, and he kind of knows, I'm pretty much getting benched if there's a lefty, or if I do actually get an opportunity, I better do well. It's a lot of pressure. If you just know, hey, Evan, you're the everyday guy out there. You play a great center field. You got a good eye up at the plate. You got wheels. We're just going to let you play, right? I think if they did that, that would probably really free him up mentally. So you're not pressing as much every time you get an opportunity against lefties. So I really think that they need to give Evan Carter some leash. The bullpen leash at this point is probably due to the fact that there's just so many dang injuries. But give Evan Carter some leash and let him play center field. He can't do worse than what Leody's given us so far. Now, Let's look at Corey Seager, because this is the lone bright spot for me tonight is Corey Seager. I think you can also say John Gray. Okay, let's not be unfair. John Gray, definite bright spot tonight in his return to Coors Field. Crying shame that John Gray didn't get a win tonight. Crying shame that John Gray goes six innings strong, one earned run, seven strikeouts, eight hits allowed. He did have one walk, and he doesn't get a win tonight. That is a shame. Rangers offense just did not come to play today. We had three guys total in the lineup that got hits today. Zeke Duran, he had two. Heim had one. Corey Seager had two. I really hope, at minimum, if nothing else, this game unlocked Corey Seager. He hit a bomb against Oakland a few nights ago to win the game for the Rangers. Huge, huge moment. He hits a double today. Oppo, kind of Oppo center, right? And then has a huge home run, 108 miles off the bat. Right field into the bullpen. Absolutely beautiful to watch Corey Seager getting those extra base hits. I hope the one positive beyond John Gray's performance that gets taken out of this game is Corey Seager's back. Yeah, he's done with spring training mode, right? Finally, he's gotten all those at-bats that he would have got at spring training. I really hope he's unlocked at this point. Now, look, I don't know if I'm going to be expecting monster games from him tomorrow and Sunday. But look, it's a good sign when Corey Seager is hitting home runs, hitting doubles, averages up to about 240 now on the year. Seager drove in the two lone runs for the Rangers today. And I'll tell you what, if they can get him going, that is a game changer for this team, especially considering our offensive struggles. A lot of them, I don't want to say they start with Seager, but it does feel like this team just feeds off of him. And when he's doing well and hitting well, this whole entire team takes it up to another level. So look, at minimum, I'm glad to see Corey Seager having a great day at the plate. Feel bad for John Gray. Didn't get the loss tonight. That goes to laughs. But I feel bad for John Gray. Tough luck, no decision tonight for him in his return to Coors Field, playing his former team, the team that drafted him. He deserved to get a win tonight, and it didn't happen. Bats didn't get it done. Now, we said all along this entire week, as we look forward to Saturday and Sunday's matchups, we said this entire week that we would be pleased with a 5-2 record at the end of the week. Could we just go 5-2? Now, what that means is the Rangers are going to have to win the next two games. If they don't win the next two games, the best they can do is 4-3 or 3-4. 3-4 would be a nightmare scenario against the two, or not, I don't want to say the two, but the worst team in baseball, the Rockies. And then Oakland, who is a little bit better this year, but we all know Oakland is nothing special. Going 3-4 this week is worst case scenario. That would mean we got swept by the Rockies. I'm hopeful that we'll end up going 5-2. I think that is a very respectable road trip. You're not going to win every single game, even against teams like the Rockies. That's the beauty of baseball. Any team can win on any given night. We do have to remember that. But I will say this. You need to be winning series against the Rockies. I'm not going to be back here tomorrow night if we lose again, saying that's just how it goes in baseball sometimes. I mean, I guess it depends on what happens, but we should be beating the Rockies 2 out of 3 times. So let's look at the matchup for tomorrow. So in tomorrow's game, we will be throwing Andrew Heaney, and it looks like Feltner is going for the Rockies. Heaney, 450 ERA, 0-4 record for Andrew Heaney. Can you believe that with how well Andrew Heaney has pitched of late? He still has 0 wins on the season. That's painful. I feel bad for the guy. He has been a tough luck loser in multiple starts. So hopefully tomorrow the Rangers can get Andrew Heaney his first win. I think Feltner is a 5.54 ERA guy. Let's see what Feltner did. Feltner, a righty, by the way. That makes me feel a little bit better. Can we just face right-handed starters? Because the lefty starters, it doesn't matter who they throw. Who the opposing team throws. If it's a lefty starter, there is a chance we will make him look like the best pitcher in Major League Baseball. I mean, you just can't make it up. It's just how the Rangers are going right now. I hope it's a funk that we get out of. But Ryan Feltner throwing for the Rockies tomorrow. In his last start, Pittsburgh lit him up. He went 5 2/3, gave up 8 hits, 5 earned runs. Against Miami, he did pitch well. He went 8 strong, only 3 earned runs. And then against San Diego, April 23rd, 4 innings pitched, 10 hits allowed, 2 walks, four earned runs. That's miraculous. Four earned runs with 12 combined base runners allowed. Not bad, especially for a guy that doesn't strike out a lot of players. So he's got 10 strikeouts over his last three starts. So not a big strikeout guy. So Ryan Feltner's a guy the Rangers should be able to do some damage off of tomorrow. I hope. Gomber definitely is going to be, I think, the toughest pitcher that the Rangers face this series. Now, let's look at Sunday. So Sunday's still to be determined. So we don't know who they're going to be facing on Sunday. Rangers have not announced the starter either. Colorado same. So we'll have to preview that tomorrow for y'all. But hopefully, Gomber, toughest starter that we'll see. I don't really think Gomber's even that tough. We just happen to make lefty starters look really good most times. So we'll see what tomorrow brings. I got to think the Rangers aren't going to be held to only two runs again. And I got to think that more than three guys in the lineup are going to be getting base hits tomorrow. Hopefully Cease continues his hot start. All is not lost. These losses suck because you could have won this game. That's, I think, what bugs me the most. If we would have gotten just like absolutely walloped tonight, it would have been frustrating. But what's hard is you felt like this was a win that the Rangers just gave away. I think that's tougher for me than, you know what, John Gray didn't have it tonight. The Rockies lit him up in the first and second inning. So I think that what I would say is the Rangers have to take care of business Saturday and Sunday. Otherwise, unsuccessful road trip, and they're really missing out on taking advantage of the Mariners and the Astros playing some good teams this week. I think Astros, by the way, did they get the win today? I was checking the score. Angels are up 1-0 in the top of the ninth on the Royals. Royals have a runner on first. Go Royals. A's are losing 8-0 to the Mariners. So I believe the Mariners are going to be, a half tied with us or a half game behind us? They are 21-18 right now. So, or 20-18. So they would go to 21-18. We're 22-18, so we might have a half-game lead on them still. Astros beat the Tigers 5-2. They moved to 14-24, and that is it around the AL West for AL West matchups. So you've got the Astros playing a Tigers team that's 500 right now on the road. You've got the A's and the Mariners hopefully beating up on each other. Angels are playing a good team. It's a great opportunity for the Rangers to gain some ground in the division playing the Rockies. You got to win these next two games. Absolute must. All right, y'all, I'll check comments, and then we are going to start winding things down. Tough night. Got to flush this one out, and you got to start new tomorrow. Tomorrow, by the way, is another night game. We have got a 7:10 Texas start time. Tomorrow is going to be a busy day in DFW sports. I believe we have the Stars and the Mavs playing at the same time tomorrow. I think those games start at 6:30, if I'm not mistaken. And then we got Rangers in that mix as well. So tomorrow is a big day for DFW sports. Of course, the Mavs and the Stars getting the win last night, each drawing that series even one game apiece. Luka goes for 29 last night and looked every bit like the MVP that he should have been. I know some of y'all probably saw the video I put out today on Luka. During baseball season, we're pretty much all Rangers. We love all DFW sports, though. So occasionally, we like to get in the mix with some of the other teams. But I'll tell you what, both those series, I think, are going to be good series that might end up going 6 or 7 games. But I sure hope that the Stars and Mavs end up victorious. My prediction is yes for both. Yes for both on to the next round. But it's not going to be easy. But for the Mavs, coming back home, Stars going on the road to Colorado. They were saying on the broadcast, I actually thought kind of a cool idea. So, you know, you've got the Rangers playing in Denver, and you've got the Stars playing in Denver. Could have done a little weekend getaway Friday night, watch the Rangers. It would have been a bad game to go to tonight. But then tomorrow night, you go catch the Stars game. Maybe you go Stars game tomorrow night, and then on Sunday, you finish out the Rangers series. And hopefully they'll get a win for you. All right, y'all, we're gonna get out of here, though. I know some of y'all are taking off too. I see in the comments. Appreciate y'all watching. By the way, an update on our system: we end up dropping today So I believe we are down to around $50 in profit, betting 1 cent on every follower that we have on Texas Rangers Moneyline, basically Texas Rangers to win. So we will look to get even higher into the black tomorrow and Sunday. But today we bounced down about $40, $50 in profit on the system on the year. Hopefully tomorrow is a new day for the Rangers. The bats will come alive. We'll get another great performance from Andrew Heaney. That's the plan. We'll have a video out to y'all probably in the afternoon. With it being a night game, I think we'll probably wait a little bit, put one out early, mid-afternoon, and then we'll be on after the game tomorrow. It might work out. We'll be able to talk about some Stars and Mavs as well in the live. All three teams, major teams, besides the Cowboys, playing tomorrow night. Should be a really fun day in DFW sports. I'm looking forward to it. Hope y'all have a great rest of your Friday night. And if I don't see you, a great rest of the weekend. Hopefully you can catch us at some point. If not, get us on the replay. But as we always say here at Ride On Rangers, God bless. Go Rangers. Hope y'all have a great night.